Welcome. I'm William Evans, and you are listening to A Living World Conversation. Our guest today is Deanna Janay from Grand Junction and Mesa, and she's also spent time in Carbondale this year. Welcome, Deanna.
Thank you, Will. I'm happy to be here.
We're happy you are here.
Thank you.
Kindly tell us, what are you doing?
I am working with soul on many levels, with people and with lineages.
Soul, S-O-U-L.
Right.
Why do people come see you?
The majority of people come because something feels missing in their life, or there's repeated patterns of, you could say, trauma. Trauma is really kind of a keystone word today that describes a lot of things that can happen to a person and a lot that can happen to their soul. I think they come not realizing that it's soul work that we're doing, but they come because they know something is not in balance. We don't necessarily stay in balance as human beings, but in moments of harmony, we are in balance. We're always going in and out of balance. But when balance really tips to one side deeply and causes stress or unusual amount of emotions, deep sadness, undigested grief, those kinds of things can cause a person to want to come in and do some work.
Well, certainly I've been at risk of neglecting my soul in the past. It was easy for me to get distracted.
We are living in a world of a lot of distractions every day, more and more and more distractions. And as I know you will, taking time to go to the river in the mornings is caring and tending your soul. And I'd say that my work is about helping or guiding people to tend their soul.
Yes, it's an integral part of my soul health.
Yes, it is.
So it's appropriate to say you help people understand their soul calling.
That's one aspect of the work that I do, healing and purpose. People often, so often come with this angst in them about not knowing why they're here, what brought them here to live in this body, in this world. And purpose is actually like an indelible stamp on the soul, and to discover that is to discover yourself, really. Usually it's right in front of you.
Have you seen a pattern? Do you have a sense of why people in this time stop listening to their soul?
Well, it's somewhat clear when you say you walk into a restaurant and you see everybody on their cell phones. I mean, that's like candy in a way, you know, just taking in candy, you know, to feed something that is calling to be fed, but not really knowing what is really talking to you. What is the messenger? Not really listening, stopping to listen to what the messenger is really trying to say. Why? You know, we're in a culture of many choices. We have so many choices, and so many things are dangled out there like candy to attract us. And it takes some vigilance to sit with your soul, to sit with yourself and listen deeply of what is wanting to be, you know, to come forth. A lot of times we get messages sort of like the, you know, proverbial 2x4 over the head, you know, where we have an illness or something like that. And that often is when we haven't been listening for a long time. that illness begins to invade, you might say, the body. And I see illness as a messenger. It's a messenger from the soul, from the heart, saying, pay attention, something needs tending.
Wow. I have to tell you a story.
Okay.
And it came to me because of what you said. We have so many choices. For a time, I practiced acupuncture in Boulder.
Okay.
And one day I was invited to tea with the Dalai Lama's physician. And there were probably five or six of us in the room. And next to me was a tall gentleman from New York who was very eager to ask the first question. And his question was, and he was, in addition to being a child psychologist in New York, was in the health food industry. So this was the granola days of Boulder.
Okay.
He explained that his practice consisted of hyperactive children. And he wanted to know if there wasn't a drink, and he used the example in those days of an alternative to Coca-Cola, that would be healthier for these children. And this went through translation.
Okay.
And then the answer came back in Tibetan and was translated. And it was, American children have too many choices.
Ah.
And the psychologist from New York didn't get it. So he went through the question again, that his practice was hyperactive children, and wasn't there a healthier way to prepare a drink for them that would be healing? And this time there was no translation. The answer just came booming back. American children have too many choices.
I'm thinking about, as a child, having the choice of a particular kind of lemonade or Kool-Aid. And that was a really, back in those days, it was quite a treat to be able to have something like that when the choice was milk or water.
Right.
And my mother, interestingly enough, knew the effects of Kool-Aid, you know, on the system. And then you add Coca-Cola on top of that as teenagers. Choices. I'm just recalling how that progression of choice came about. I grew up in a really rural area in Montana. And in the winter, we didn't have fruit in the grocery stores. You know, it was such a big deal to have the trucks come up from Florida or California with grapefruit and oranges. And we would get those actually, honestly, in our stockings.
Right.
And so that was a very precious time, you know, and very precious food that we ate. And now we have so many choices. I find it really difficult even to go to a restaurant with a menu because there are just so many choices. It's mind-boggling in a way. And call me old-fashioned if you want, but, you know, I find it's very, very distracting.
Yeah. Well, a pivotal moment occurred for you in October of 1984. Mm. And both literally and metaphorically, the source water of your current work was a frozen icy ledge on El Diente, a mountain near Telluride.
Right.
Tell us about what happened there.
Oh my gosh. Well, back in those days, I was hiking a lot and climbing, you know, 14,000 foot peaks like many Coloradans do. And we decided to tackle El Diente. which we didn't really have a really good route to go up. But so it was quite strenuous to just get to 13,500 feet. And when we got to the pinnacle of El Diente, the tooth, there was no way to climb to the top of that with the gear that we had. So we started down, and it was later in the afternoon. By that time, it was probably 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And we started down, and it had snowed a couple days before that. And the only way that we could see to get down this route was crossing a ledge that, and that ledge was icy. It was iced over. And my husband at the time was very successful in crossing it. And he had a big smile on his face. He was real, real, you know, maybe proud of himself. And he's looking at me like, well, come on, you need to do this, because this is the only way we're going to get down. And I am tired and I'm scared because I can see the ice on the ledge. And so I start crossing it, and my hand slipped and I began to tumble down. And if you've climbed any of the 14ers, you know what those rock, you know, ascents are, those rocky, stony ascents. And I started bouncing down the rocks, and partway down, it just happened in such a split second, but I heard the voice tell me how to save my life. And, you know, I attribute that somewhat to my inner knowing, because I had taken avalanche safety courses, and I was a mountaineer skier and things like that. So I followed the protocol, and in following the protocol, I was able to get my feet straight down the mountain and my hands to my side, not grabbing any rocks. I was told not to grab anything. My glasses flew off, and the voice also said to keep your head up. So here I am, kind of like a bullet shooting down this very, very rocky slope. And fortunately, in some ways, I hit a big rock with my feet, and it stopped me cold. It also really hurt my body, but I didn't break any bones. So I was very fortunate in that way. But I laid there for quite a while. It took probably 20 minutes or so for my partner to get down to me. And when he got me to stand up, there was a 50-foot drop that I could have gone over and wouldn't be sitting here today. But anyway, when I hit the rock, a voice, and this was a very loud, booming voice, which I'd heard once before in my life, but that voice said, you have work to do. So we get down the mountain. I'm very curious about what that voice was, but it took about 5 hours to get to our base camp at Navajo Lake. That night, I just dreamt and fell like 100 times over and over and over. And the next 10 years was a journey of, what does that mean? I have work to do.
So you were healing your body, but you were also looking for ways to heal your soul.
I was looking for ways to heal my soul, because I knew that that voice didn't come from me. That voice was a calling, I think. Maybe it did come from me, you know. Those are the kinds of questions I think we always ask ourselves. Is that really my deeper inner knowing? Is that my heart? Is that my soul speaking? But I did know it wasn't my day to die. And so, yes, I started doing a lot of healing and seeking out traditional healers, healers of other, I sought out medical, Western medicine, and other healing modalities. And I learned a lot in 10 years. From that, I began to do massage healing work myself, you know, with people. I went to school and became a massage therapist. Gosh, It took about 10 years, really, to heal my body from that fall. And this, probably my soul, too.
This is KDNK, and you're listening to a Living World conversation with Deanna Janae. And you've told me building a relationship with your soul has been a slow process.
It has been a slow process, and I... You know, judging from what we talked about earlier, Will, about all the choices in life, I think that it can be a slow process because we live in the Western, you know, modern world, and we're always faced with a lot of choices to make in our day, you know, and the choice of going deep and meditating or spending time at the river, spending time in nature, spending time that tends our soul is sometimes put on the back burner. And I had a child to raise and other work other than healing work. Yeah, so it took a long time. It's taken a long time. And I'm still learning. I'm really, actually really excited about where I am in life right now because I have this spaciousness to really delve deeper and deeper into what soul is and all the iterations of how people have learned about soul have come into my life to teach and inform me too, as well as my own tradition that I've been initiated in and learning from that tradition.
Now your soul is hungry for wisdom.
You know, we go through our lives with these natural markers that we could call initiation markers, like initiation into adulthood. Marriage is a kind of an initiatory process. Adulthood is, there's kind of an initiatory process or a transitional time, you know, of learning what it means to be an adult and take responsibility for our lives. And then as we age, what I've noticed, and with my friends too, is that there's a moment in time when we stop doing what we've been doing. And I feel it's nature calling us to stop and look back and take a look at what we've done in our life. And it's kind of like harvesting wheat. You know, you take the chaff off the wheat and the kernel and what is left. And what is left after we've looked at our life and decided what we can throw away or what is not useful anymore and what is wisdom to keep is this time of great time of learning for us. And I feel like a doorway opens at that time, at this time, especially for me and some of my closer friends that I know. This doorway opens for a different kind of learning, a different kind of sort of like digesting everything that we've done in life, bringing us to a point of being able to be elders and wisdom. And so I feel like I'm in a process of doing that actual processing of my life and picking out what is wise and hoping that I'll be able to share that for the future generations.
That digestive process transforms into wisdom.
Yes, you know, just as our body digests food, right? The vitamins, the minerals and all those things that our bones and our body needs for a good healthy body. It's the same kind of thing, and we let the janitor take care of the rest. Yeah. It's like that. It is a digestive process.
You also said to me, the biggest malady of our culture is that people don't know their purpose or even acknowledge that they have a soul to listen to.
Well, In my experience, 30 years of being a healer, helping people, that is usually and most often what people come for, asking, what is my purpose? And it's so interesting to talk with a person and kind of get a life's history and see the patterns in a person's life. And, you know, we often can't see our own patterns, but showing it to somebody else and doing a deep dive into the history of your life, you begin to see what the patterns are. And those patterns are sort of like fractals. They keep repeating themselves and repeating themselves, and you can put the pieces of that puzzle together and see what a person's purpose is. And, you know, so many people want a lofty purpose or think that they should be doing something more than what they are. And sometimes it's just as simple as kindness.
Yes. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people, I mean, I'm thinking of my mother, and I've been thinking about my mother a lot lately. And one of her greatest gifts was her kindness and her jolly disposition. And, you know, growing up in a very difficult environment, she always carried that, and people loved her. And so, for example, at her funeral, there were so many people there that I hadn't seen in so many years, and so many people said how much they loved my mother, and they loved her for her joy, her ability to make people smile, you know, her kindness.
Beautiful. What is your soul calling you to do right now?
Well, one of the loudest voices that's happening in the world today, I feel, that I'm hearing, is ancestral work, working with our ancestors, and actually working with the untended, hungry and not so hungry ghosts that are not ancestralized yet, our lineages. And that's really calling me to learn and be proficient at helping people help their ancestral lines or their lineage become ancestralized. So that's really calling me right now. And some of the work that I do to do that in this moment that I've done for the last 20 years or so is what's called funerary rites, where I help the soul move through the realms in order to be ancestralized. And what ancestralization really means to me is that our souls are well and healthy and bright. And with well, healthy, and bright souls on the other side helping us, they are here to help us, by the way, with that brightness, our world can be different. Our world can be better. We can find joy. We can find our purpose. I think it takes us back into, maybe not back into, but into a place of more wholeness in our lives as living people.
And tell our listeners what you mean by hungry ghosts.
Yeah, well, I'm going to start there with so many cultures. I have a background in anthropology, so I'm very interested in other cultural ways of working with the dead, you might say. Many cultures have had funerary rites and very elaborate funerary rites. And in my work in archaeology, we'd always know that a culture was pretty well put together when you could see that they had elaborate funerary rites. And what elaborate funerary rites really do is ancestralize the soul of the person who has passed to a place where they can actually be helping the people, the living people. When we don't do that in our society, we don't do that very much in our society, somewhat, but not very much, and we don't have a real strong relationship with death and ancestors. We're not really an ancestrally connected culture. We can have souls that haven't been ancestralized. And that means that sometimes those souls are hungry and they want something from us. And a lot of times the decisions that we make in life are based on what those hungry souls want. There are also souls that are not detrimental or hungry, but they're just kind of roaming around. And I was having a conversation with a friend just recently about one time I climbed up Mount Sopris and I had to stop in the middle of the hike and I couldn't go any further because there was a energy bubble there that just felt like something tragic had happened. And I felt that the soul of that person hadn't actually probably left the realm to go on to be ancestralized, that they were still there crying for help. I know that sounds very dramatic, but I think people feel that a lot and may not even know what you're feeling. So that's what I mean by either hungry ghosts crying out for some help, or ghosts might sound like a Halloween word, but it's a soul that hasn't been ancestralized, hasn't gone through the full transition of becoming an ancestor.
And what did you do?
Well, back then I didn't know what to do. I sat there for a long time and said some prayers. That's all I knew to do at that time. And then I didn't go any further because I didn't feel it was safe for me to go any further. And I didn't know about having, you know, good, strong boundaries and things like that. So I just felt very vulnerable. So I didn't continue on.
So, Deanna, if someone wants to communicate with you, what would be the way that you'd like them to do that?
Oh, thank you. Well, the best way would be through my website, Deanna-Jenny, J-E-N-N-E, without the accent, .com. So it's Deanna-Jenny.com.
Wonderful. Thank you, Deanna.
You're welcome, Will.
This is KDNK, and you've been listening to A Living World Conversation with Deanna Janae. Thank you for listening.